And welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Shannon.
Hello.
Harry.
Hello.
And making his long-awaited return, James.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about our review of Stellar Blade. I'm coming back to you, James, don't you worry. Review of Stellar Blade, Embrace's breakup, Atari bringing back a classic publishing brand, and some leaks around the spooky new Assassin's Creed game that I'm very excited to talk about. But first, let's talk about James and your return from your trip to Japan. It feels like you've been away donkeys now. What was it, 4 weeks in total or something?
I think 3.5 weeks-ish. Yeah.
How'd you find it? Was it your first time in Japan, right?
Yeah. It's like my first like trip that I didn't go with like, you know, mum and dad on that wasn't a week, you know. Like full proper holiday. So yeah. It was good. It's really
good.
You
do a few like kind of gaming related things. I know we talked about that a little bit before you left.
Yeah. Like I went to a pachinko parlor. That was like, like I was like,
just to see shocked. What Konami are up to nowadays.
Yeah, it was genuinely shocking, like how like loud it was and how much it smelt like cigarettes, and I don't know. It was not a nice vibe. Went to a game station, saw some cool arcade games. Bought a lot of old GameCube games.
Cool.
Yeah. It's definitely, like, true what people say, like, everything is very crowded, and tourists are definitely picking up all the good shit from retro game stores. Like, obviously, I did too, but, like, you know, I want to keep them, I don't want to sell them, which I think is the difference. But, yeah, like, overall, like, really cool. Like, I really, obviously, everyone's going, like, I really recommend it, but,
yeah,
it is a very cool place, very it's different to here, obviously. Yeah, definitely do it. Like, I spent, obviously... a lot of time in like Osaka, Kyoto, and Tokyo, but we took two days to go up to the mountains as well, and that was really good, especially after Disneyland and Disney Sea. It was good to like reset and just not see anyone or anything for 2 days straight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did it. I walked past Capcom. That was exciting to know that like.
Presumably, there's a photo.
Trying to peek through the windows,
right?
I didn't actually take a photo, but like I didn't think about that. I took a photo with like every Godzilla I saw, but not Capcom. But yeah, it's kind of cool to see where all your favorite games are made.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Nice. Can you? Yeah. Okay. I was worried I was coming through the wrong microphone for a second there. That's working. Did you get to Mario World as well?
Yeah, I did. I went to Universal Studios. Not my best experience, but Mario World was really cool. Not Nintendo World, I should say. Kind of sucks because, like, you can see all of the Donkey Kong shit, like, in the distance.
Yeah, you can like, see the, like, top of the temple peering over the top.
Yeah, so that was, like, a big tease because I would have loved to have seen all that stuff because it is so close. I think it just got pushed back to the end of the year, though, so something must be going on there. But, yeah, really cool. It's very, like, you see videos and you think, wow, it looks really cool, but I don't know. Nothing beats being there. Like, it's so overwhelming, like, in person. I don't know how to describe it. Mm. It's just really odd to be able to look around everywhere and you're just in Mario World.
Yeah, I can imagine that being quite surreal.
Yeah,
I was chatting to a colleague about it who went, and he kind of said it felt very expensive, and, like, you were kind of, like, the wristbands that kind of interact with stuff were, like, an extra cost and stuff. And he said if you're kind of not too stressed about that, it's a lot of fun just to kind of explore and interact with things and take plenty of photos, obviously.
I bought a wristband. I'm, like, if I am there and excited, I'll buy anything, really. So I bought a wristband and a lot of other dumb shit, Donkey Kong hat. But, yeah. The wristband, you don't have to buy that, obviously, but and it's cool to be able to, like, hit a block and it makes a noise. Like, I know that's really simplistic, but, like, it is a really cool experience to kind of be Mario.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the equivalent for me would be going to Galaxy's Edge, and I for sure would be doing, like, the lightsaber building and the droid building and stuff as well, so.
Yeah, not as much Star Wars stuff there, but I thought there would be a lot more at Disney. Yeah. Not much Star Wars stuff.
I think there's talk of them doing something similar there as well. Maybe that's on the way. I can't remember. Gaming wise, have you been able to keep up? Have you been able to kind of play the games over the last few weeks that you would have wanted to, or have you got a big backlog now?
Not at all. Like, I've got Final Fantasy. I still haven't touched. Obviously, I wasn't going to play that over there. I took the old Paper Mario to play, and I just didn't really get. I didn't really gel with it as much as I thought, and I didn't get much time. Yeah, like, I've got a lot to play. Stellar Blade.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it.
You're teeing me up for that segue.
I am, yeah. Somebody else here has played more than me.
Have you watched Fallout as well?
No TV. No. I only watched, The Curse, which like probably isn't relevant for this podcast, but was really good.
I'm keen to hear your thoughts on that when you do get the chance. But you did mention Stellar Blade. You were eager to play that. Harry, you're joining the show today because you are the man that played and reviewed Stellar Blade for the website. It's the new PlayStation exclusive action adventure game that I know we've been eager to see more of. What did you make of the game?
I really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought that I would. When we were talking about it when Kieran played the demo a couple of weeks ago, I was a bit surprised that he said, I think you were too, that it was like a bit soulsy. I think if you hadn't watched like the gameplay videos, the walkthroughs and stuff they put out, it kind of looks like it's a character action game, but it kind of isn't that. But I don't think that was a bad thing. There's obviously a lot of comparisons to like Nier Automata and Sekiro going around, which I think some of them are like apt comparisons, others not so much. But yeah, I really enjoyed it overall. I think the combat system is really, really strong. The boss fights are great. The main story is like pretty average, but the way that they build the world and the characters was really engaging, and a lot of the side content does that, which I kept coming back to it because I wanted to sort of explore the world more through that lens. I think it was a really really nice showing for Shift Up for their first console game.
I wanted to ask you about the main narrative kind of versus the world building, because you had some qualms with, I guess, the kind of storytelling of the main narrative. I think you said it was a bit predictable in your review. But you had a lot of praise for the world building. How was the lore kind of packaged up and delivered to you? And I guess what connected with you there that didn't about the story?
I think one thing that they do, so like the game has this, this city called Zion, which is like the last city of humanity. It's basically like the last stand of humanity against the Netibers, which are like these fleshy, spongy alien things, that have like wiped out the rest of mankind. And like in Zion, people are very much losing faith that like humanity can ever claw back the world from these monsters. And they've sort of been indoctrinated into believing in this thing called the Mother Sphere, which is like this thing in the sky that is what dispatches the main character down to the surface and things like that. But there's like propaganda on the walls and posters you can look at and notes from characters denouncing the Mother Sphere. People finding things out that they shouldn't, and you can find notes scattered about the world talking about that, like the Mother Sphere is a lie and the angels aren't all you think they are and so on, the truth behind the Netibar. And this stuff is also delivered in the main narrative, but like a lot of the stuff you can find in Zion and through the side quests paint a much broader picture of it all, and how the people feel about it, which I think was most interesting. Because I think especially if you've played Nier Automata, the like core plot beats that I think the game wants you to get really excited about are very easy to see coming. There's a lot of similarities. And even if you haven't played Nier, I think you will pick up on, like, the game's pretty heavy-handed with it. So,
I think I read in your review it very much kind of acknowledges its source of inspiration.
Yeah, it does not shy away from it at all.
And the combat as well, like you kind of mentioned it, feeling a bit more soulsy. Is that kind of in the risk versus reward nature of it? Or I haven't yet played it myself. I didn't actually make time for the demo. Like I kind of imagined it being a bit faster and flashier, but is it a bit more methodical?
I think it straddles a very like fine line between it. When you encounter any enemy, whether it's a boss or just like a generic Netibar, you usually won't just like hack and slash on it until it's dead, because they aren't staggered. Like they can freely hit you while you're doing that. But it's like a perfect parry or a dodge that will get you an opening, and then that's when you sort of start unleashing your combos. So it isn't like. Gotcha. It isn't like Sekiro where you're timing your strikes and waiting for your enemy to respond to your own attacks. It's sort of like you want to knock them off balance and then you hit them with your own combos. So it does feel a little bit like a character action game in that sense. But also sort of like Sekiro in terms of, as far as Souls-like goes, it's more like Sekiro because you're parrying and things like that.
Yeah.
You do play a bit more considered in that sense when you're aiming like for those to knock them off balance, especially in boss fights as well. And it does have a mechanic where like you can break their posture. They have, every enemy has like a certain number of like nodes underneath their health bar, and if you hit that many perfect parries, they're open to like what's called a retribution attack, which is a big flashy, usually a finishing attack if it's a regular Nativa. Mm-hmm. If it's a boss Nativa, you get big damage. So yeah, it's a bit of both. So it sort of like paves its own way in that sense. I wouldn't say you can directly compare it to either genre or style of game. So
yeah, it's always very cool when a game can draw inspiration so plainly from other games but still add a layer of its own.
Yeah, it feels quite distinct in that sense. It's quite impressive the way that they like take from all these different elements but still build something that is kind of their own. So
yeah. James, have you got questions on the game? I'm sure you do. Are you liking what you're hearing so far?
I've played like 6 hours, but I don't know. Like it's good. But
I'm not quite connecting with you the same way. No, I'm guessing.
It is good. Like I love that. You know, this traditionally mobile game developer has made a game of this caliber.
Yeah.
I just think like it's between those two. Like Harry's saying, it's like kind of between the two worlds of being like a Devil May Cry or Bayonetta, mm-hmm. or like a Sekiro / Dark Souls style. Like it's kind of between those two design philosophies, but I don't feel like it does. I don't know. I'm very early. Maybe it will get better for me. I just hate how boring Eve is. Like she's so uninteresting as a character so far, and like I also just can't help but wonder like you didn't like if you spent more time writing her rather than like modeling her labia, like that would be like a better use of your time as developers. I feel personally, like I could be wrong, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's just so uninteresting so far. Like, I'm not feeling really pushed by the story or anything. I agree with Harry in that the world is... The idea of, like, the Mother Sphere and all of that shit is really cool. And the combat is pretty fast-paced, but, like, I do feel like it's a little bit one-note at the moment. I don't know if it gets better after a certain amount of time.
You do get... it, like, does slowly give
different
you...
weapons?
New stuff to do. No new weapons, but you do get, like... You get new toys.
Yeah, okay.
Not weapons, but, like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm keen to play more and see, like, because obviously, I think me and Harry have similar tastes in action games, for sure. So, I feel like I will probably, like, come warm up to it. But right now, like, I'm just not 100% feeling it, to be honest.
But yeah, another criticism we'll you had of the game, Harry, was the kind of platforming sections of it. Sounds like
yeah.
they
also
kind of
yeah,
a
that,
bit clunky.
Yeah.
What sort of percentage of your time is kind of divided up between combat, I guess, like the kind of exploration that you've touched on as well, and the platforming? Yeah. Is platforming quite a big bit of the game?
Yeah, it's like on the Golden Path, it's probably like 20 to 25%, maybe, maybe less.
Quite a lot.
But like, it does feel like it happens quite often. A lot of like, a lot of what there is on the main path is quite straightforward. It's the like optional stuff where you can get like weapon upgrades and health upgrades that it gets a bit trickier. But I need to emphasize that like it is always so frustrating. Like it's so clunky and janky. there's no consistency. Like Eve never knows if she wants to grapple onto a ledge or not, or just fall to her death. And she simultaneously feels like twitchy in the way that she responds to the controller, but also like heavy and delayed. So yeah,
it's just okay.
Really, and she feels fine in combat. So it's just a really weird blight.
Yeah. I'm not like excusing it either, but this is a problem all these games have. I feel like even DMC and Bayonetta are still like kind
yeah,
of
that's
struggling.
That's a really good point. Yeah,
like I don't know what the solution is, but like even if you play a DMC or Bayonetta or Ninja Gaiden, even the platforming is never that good. But they always seem to insist on including sections like that.
Sections,
so
yeah.
I don't know what the solution is. Besides,
I mean, I'm on the record having really enjoyed the platforming in Jedi Survivor. But I feel like that is quite clunky as well. Like, it becomes part of the challenge, I sort of feel, in the kind
of
clunky-ish.
I haven't played Survivor, but I feel like the platforming in Fallen Order was really good.
Okay.
Here, it's just like a fundamental thing, and it's the same thing in like Bayonetta and DMC, where like the characters just feel so heavy, and that's because it's how they've been made to feel in combat, and it just doesn't translate to platforming at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of conscious that we focused on a couple of the negatives there, but it's probably worth noting that overall you were very favorable to the game.
I was very positive, yeah.
And really enjoyed it. Really
another thing that I really loved was the soundtrack. I mean, there's so many comparisons to Nier, but they have the same composer. He did a bunch of the tracks for this game, and it really comes through. Yeah, there's so much good music in this game, especially in like the overworld exploration themes and things like that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. I gave it a 9 in the end, so I scored it very highly.
Yeah. Is it pretty high up your kind of game of the year list then now?
I wouldn't say it really comes close to like Unicorn Overlord or Rebirth. But I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Exciting. Another game I have to try and like find the time to play.
He gets a demo as well, so if you don't want to take the plunge on the full price tag.
Will definitely need to do that.
And it is like 20 to 30 hours as well, so you definitely get a lot there.
Oh, okay. It's not quite as long as I thought it would be. That's good. I'm really keen to play Tales of Kenzira, which is out now as well, and Kieran's review of that is over on the website. I want to shout that out. I think he gave that an 8, so I'm pleased to see that he enjoyed that, and I think across the board it's getting received pretty favorably. As is Stellar Blade too, so yeah, good week of games coming out. Another was Topspin as well, Shannon, which you reviewed. I know you love your tennis games. Was this a return to form for that franchise?
It's always hard with like these games and like AFL and niche sport games, because it's kind of just like you take what you can get, right? Because there's not a lot of other option and you're just happy to have it. It is good. Like, the presentation's really good. It's a 2K game, so obviously there had been some other tennis games by, like, Big Ant and such that hadn't hit the mark, but this does feel really good gameplay-wise. Maybe even it's at its best for Topspin. It's always been good, but it does feel really well done and thought out in that regard. It's hard because, like, the faults that I had were more around it is, like, a 2K game, and I feel like they've really found a formula they've stuck with in terms of it's grindy from everything from, like, the season pass to progression. Like, you really have to grind through in the same as WWE or NBA 2K. But again, like, I'm fine with that if that means we're going to get more of these and it does well. So, yeah, I think if you're a tennis fan, you're going to probably pick this up. There's a lot of issues that people have with the roster. It's quite small in terms of current players. It's always been an issue for tennis games. Like, they'll have, like, two of the big four in Federer and Nadal, or, like, not the others. I just think it's expensive to license players. Like, they know that they can charge a premium, because what other option do these companies have? So, I don't know. They're saying they're going to add more as time goes on. And it being 2K, like, I feel like you have to kind of believe that. For me, I don't really care. Like, I pick one or two players and stick with that. It's not like a fighting game where there's a big reason to have like 50 different characters with different attributes. So, yeah, I think I'm still shocked that we have this game. It's fine. Like, it's better than fine. It's just like there are some negatives there, but I'm having a good time with it. It pulled me away from Stellar Blade, which I was also enjoying. But yeah, this is going to be a game I sink a lot of time into. I think
it's kind of the kind of game you keep coming back to, right? When you're kind of just looking for
It's just good. It's good mindless fun. Like, you don't have to be like 100% in. You can be like watching something in the background or just like killing time whilst playing it. And there is a career mode, and like that is a good reason to keep going back. And again, it is repetitive with the things that it serves up, but it has a story, it has audio logs. I don't know. I think it's a great attempt. I still can't believe we have it. It was out super soon after reveal, and I hope they build on it, because there's a good foundation there.
Well, I very much appreciated the serves up pun. That was great. I want to quickly shout out a game that I've been playing too, which I feel like is not often the case, but I downloaded No Rest for the Wicked, which is the new game from the creators of like Ori and the Blind Forest, that sort of thing. And it's a very different sort of game. It's like kind of, it's not isometric. I forget what the view's called now.
It is isometric, isn't it?
Is it isometric? Yeah. Kind of Souls-like sort of game. Very kind of Souls-like. Every sort of combat encounter is quite sort of strategic and trying to find the sort of space to work opponents out, that kind of thing. And the loot and the world is really, really cool. I haven't played nearly enough of the game, but I have very much been enjoying it so far. It's made a strong impression. Anyhow, we better crack on with the rest of the show because we've got heaps still to discuss. Let's start with Embracer splitting up into three separate businesses. Well, I see separate businesses might not be the correct term. Entities, I think they've been referring to them as. We've obviously spoken a lot about Embracer on the show over recent weeks. There's been shuttering of studios and layoffs of staff. But they've now revealed intentions to divide into three distinct entities, that being the Asmodee Group, another being Coffee Stain and Friends, and the third being Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. James, how much are you across this and the plans? So do you have kind of much support for this decision?
I feel like it's some complex way to avoid paying more tax or something. It doesn't strike me as like, I don't know. And the like and Friends shit is like, I don't know.
Enterprises like, and Friends in some cases as well.
The big one, I think their biggest, like their big AAA group is the Middle Earth one, but
yeah.
They're not really the lead, like, I don't know. It's all really odd to me.
Maybe I should provide a bit more detail as to what these three entities are. Yeah. So Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends is going to be the home for powerhouse franchises and AAA development with IP, including the likes of The Lord of the Rings, Tomb Raider, Dead Island, Kingdom Come Deliverance, Metro, and more. So that includes like Crystal Dynamics, Danboss Studios, Eidos Montreal, Flying Wild Hog Studios, a bunch.
Just like their AAA house. Yeah, well, not house, but you know, like group now, right?
Yeah, and they're big dogs, for lack of a better term.
Then
you've got Coffee Stain and Friends, which is brands like Coffee Stain, Ghost Ship, Tarsia, Tuxedo Labs, as well as like THQ Nordic and Amplify Game Invest, under a premium segment with another free-to-play segment, taking up like more of a mobile-focused division. So there's still a lot in there, but that kind of seems like more of that like kind of AA territory, maybe kind of skewing a bit more indie as well, with some maybe more experimental stuff. That's kind of the odd one here for me, that one. And then Asmodee is around board games, trading cards, digital board games, that kind of thing. So that's quite distinct. Yeah, Harry, what do you make of all of this? It kind of, is it just kind of a business thing or something good creative?
I don't know. I don't really think it will change anything. I think it's purely a business thing. I feel like things haven't been going like too hot for Embracer recently, right?
No.
So like, I don't know. Maybe it's a last ditch effort to salvage something on their end that like we don't know about. I'm curious to see how it impacts like their studios, like especially in Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, which is such a stupid name, by the way. But like, they do have some like good studios under that umbrella, like
for sure,
like Flying Wild Hog and things like that. So I'll be curious to see how it impacts them, if at all, and whatever they're working on next. But I mean, hopefully it's a good thing.
They said that the kind of move, it feels like kind of a restructuring more so than anything, will allow each entity to focus better on their key strengths and unleash their full potential. Kind of sounds like they're going to find leaders that kind of work within each entity to kind of focus in on their particular area, style of game, and maybe hopefully kind of appoint people that get the industry a bit more. I sort of feel like they're approaching it from a very business-centric sort of position and see it as investment without maybe really understanding like the process of making games. Yeah. Shannon, I
think it
makes
sense. I think it does make sense for two reasons. I think the Embracer name, for those that are really into this day-to-day, like obviously doesn't have any goodwill at the moment. But then, like, how you've broken it out, like, the Middle Earth and Friends is a stupid name. Like, as a... Yeah, that just feels weird. But, like, I think how you described it in, like, AAA, AA, and then the rest is, like, a nice way to break it out. It's just... It's weird that the first one is so, like, top-heavy. Like, that feels like 98% of their output, and then it's just the rest. Like, that's the bit that's a bit odd. I think you could break that out even further to have more focus, to be honest. But I don't know, it does make sense. There's been a lot of takes, as there is with anything happens in the industry, that just like I'm this feels logical to me. Like, I don't know the intentions behind it. It's very possible they could be bad, but like, doesn't seem that odd that they're doing this.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens. I
think kind of structurally it makes sense to kind of group like with like and appoint people kind of with focused oversight of like the those developers. But yeah, I reckon that these names are going to get rebranded at some point as well. Like it just seems like very much
externally,
like a thing.
Like it means nothing to anyone. Like it's all, no one will care about it after yesterday.
Yeah, maybe. All right, news item number two is Atari bringing back the Infogrames label. Infogrames developed and published a number of games in its 20-plus years of operation, including Bugs Bunny, Lost in Time, Micro Machines, and Sheepdog and Wolf, which I think Kieran was a big fan of. That one seemed to get special attention in his write-up of this news. Infogrames also revealed it's acquired its very first new IP in the form of 2019's Totally Reliable Delivery Service, which it says is a high-potential franchise that it plans to re-energize. I'll confess, I've got no history with Infogrames because it's kind of well before my time, the sort of existence. I'm curious, to any of you, is this a big deal? Are you excited for this?
I was going to say the same until you said Bugs Bunny Lost in Time, because I feel like that was like a big part of my childhood, like going back to that game. I don't know why I wasn't really a massive Looney Tunes fan, but I feel like that was one of the first PS1 games I owned, or like, I don't know, one that I got after not getting any for ages, and like always went back to that in holidays. So that was a good one. This felt random. I know Kieran was really excited, but Kieran gets excited about a lot of weird things.
Maybe he needed to be on the show to really champion this return. James, what about you? Do you have any history with Infogrames?
Like, I remember the logo flashing up before some games when I was growing up, but like, I don't, like, it's not, and to me, like, as an example, of, you know, the Looney Tunes situation,
yeah,
like, they can bring that publisher back, but do they have magically have the license for Looney Tunes again? Like, yeah, that's, I don't think that's really how imagine, it works. Right? I don't mean to upset Kieran, but like, I don't think this magically means that every Infogrames property is back on the table. Even like Infogrames, one of their most famous games was Alone in the Dark, and obviously that's not with Atari anymore. Mm. Now they're Infogrames. I think, yeah, this is just a weird business thing.
Maybe they'll
like,
get snapped up by Middle Earth and Friends, and it'll be happy times. Yeah.
I'm already calling it the wrong thing too, because I get missing that R and saying Infogames rather than Infogrames.
I think when I was a kid, I used to say Infogrames as well. I just remember that like the logo, like the armadillo popping up. Like that was cool. I guess, I don't know. It's an odd thing. Like,
have they said what their intentions are? Like, have they said anything else apart from?
So the Atari CEO said, for decades, Infogrames built a reputation as a publisher and developer of amazing, eclectic games, and we're excited to bring it back. The brand will be focused heavily on game preservation, as well as physical and digital distribution of its catalog of games, along with development of new sequels and collections.
So, I mean, I can
expand upon,
I can see there, like, obviously, if they do still own some licenses, they've just obviously bought Night Dive as well. They could definitely say get Night Dive to bring back some of their games. But I can see that happening, like maybe more easily than what Night Dive couldn't have done without this being a thing. I don't know. This doesn't like excite me. Like, I'm not like, oh fuck yeah. Like when I heard that Infogrames was coming back, you know, like, I was just like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then I just moved on with my life, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
I threw it on the show thinking someone would be like really excited about this.
It could totally be exciting, but like Atari, I don't know what they've been doing. Like, they keep releasing these new consoles and weird things. Like, what happened to that $1,000 console they released a year or
like
so ago?
12 like, old men bought them, and then that was it. I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of an interesting time as well, like, given there's kind of so much pressure sort of on publishers to kind of make return, it seems like a harder thing to sort of do in this particular climate as well. I think it's a bold choice to be going, yeah, we're bringing back, like, a legacy publishing publishing label. I'm sure they've kind of got some plans and if it's bringing back kind of older games, maybe there's a cost-effective way of doing that. But yeah, I worry that it won't be another 20 years for Infogrames. We'll see. I do have a lot of excitement, though, for Assassin's Creed Hex, with new details kind of reportedly leaking this past week as well, via Tom Henderson, who's quite notable in this sort of space. The footage that he claims to have seen showed off a witch-like protagonist with powers, including the ability to possess cats, all within a dark and gloomy 16th century European city. Obviously, the possessing cats thing, very exciting. And as soon as I mentioned that to my girlfriend, she's like, you need to get this game and I need to watch you play it. What do you make of this, though, James? Like, when Hex was kind of first presented to us, it was kind of clear that this was going to be quite a different Assassin's Creed title. But is this a bigger departure than you anticipated?
I think so. I don't, like the cynical side of me is like, it just sounds so far removed from what an Assassin's Creed game is. Like why is it an Assassin's Creed? But then, like, obviously the brain part of me is like, well, you know, games are expensive. Like, if it's got that brand recognition, I know a lot of people who will just buy Assassin's Creed because it is Assassin's Creed. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's like a really easy way for them to kind of introduce new ideas. What was your question? I think...
Are you surprised? Like, magical sort of powers. I don't think you've seen anything like that in Assassin's Creed game before, right? Like does that interest you?
Like, I feel like we have.
I feel like there was some stuff in Odyssey, right?
With all of the Isu shit and, like, the pieces of Eden can control people. Like, that, just because it's got, like, a sci-fi tinge, like, it's still magic, right?
It wasn't, like, ever something, like, you as a player were, like, wielding, though, right? Unless that's
a portion of a
game. Yeah, you did
in some of the games. But I'm being a bit disingenuous, but you are right. Like, you don't be able to possess an animal. Well, besides, an eagle, kind of. But, like,
Maybe it'll just be like that.
Now that I'm saying all of this out loud, it fits, it's fine. Let's go ahead with it. But, I think it is exciting. I think it's cool to have, like, a darker tone to Assassins. I feel like they kind of have been stepping away from that for a bit. Yeah. I like that Assassins is being... There's going to be all kinds of different Assassin's Creed experiences, like they've said in this leak, that it's not going to be this 120-hour epic like Valhalla was. You know, like, I like that that's going to be something quite different. I've always been most excited for this out of the three leaked projects, like Jade, Red, and this. Yeah. I think it's 2026 was the rumor, maybe, or 2025, I don't know.
2026 and the multiplayer one was next year, I think.
That's so far away. Yeah. I'm going to be, like, dead by then. But, like, it'll be cool, like, to hopefully play it if I'm still around.
It's only 2 years, James.
You know, that's, like, so far away. I'm keen, like, obviously, but... And it's an area of history that is interesting and hasn't really been touched before by Assassin's Creed either, so...
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, because, like, the Assassin's Creed codename Red, which is kind of the one that's anticipated we'll get before March, I think it is, so it's, like, could be later this year, could be early sort of next year, that's the one set in feudal Japan. Like, I'm kind of... I've sort of had that feel now of that kind of game with Ghost of Tsushima and, you know, maybe more recently Rise of the Ronin as well. So I'm less excited for that one at this point in time than
there'll
I perhaps once
games,
was.
There'll be different games, though. They'll be very different. Like, And I feel like Ubisoft builds worlds differently. Like, I'm not saying that in a slant against anyone. But I do.
I think it's sad because, that's for sure. Like, that was the original one people wanted, like, before any of those games. Like, people were crying for that in an AC world. But I think it'll do well still.
I think the
release, like, same day as Ghost of Tsushima 2.
The protagonists and stuff, that's obviously quite a different twist on everything we're used to.
Yeah.
Like, Rise of the Ronin and, the other one, Ghost of Tsushima.
You mean, like, because I think in Red it's kind of speculated to be like a choice of two characters, right? Like a samurai or a shinobi.
I think, like, they're, I don't want to say like African or Jamaican or something.
They're like a migrant to Japan. And
yeah, kind of, so like I feel like that alone is going to have like a different feel to say, you know, just playing as another samurai. And I think the girl character is a shinobi or something. You're right.
Some combination of that.
I gotta admit, though, when I read this, I didn't think Hex would go that far into the witchcraft stuff. I thought there would definitely be, like, witch trials and witch hunts, but I thought
it would just be the setting, right?
Yeah, I thought it might have been, like, yeah, we're like hunting witches, but they don't actually exist. But it looks like it's going to be, well, they do exist. Like, so, yeah.
I kind of like the idea of, like, instead of throwables or something, like you quite often have in Assassin's Creed game, that there is kind of like a kind of magical element to it. And maybe it's quite kind of subtle sort of things. I'm not imagining like a fireball blast or anything like that, but maybe it's just kind of moving things in the environment, interacting with things, that kind
Odyssey
of thing.
Or had more teleporting.
All these sort of stuff.
Like, you could teleport with a spear and stuff. So, I don't, yeah. I think they could do
anything for some
more ridiculous than Odyssey.
Okay.
But we'll see.
Yeah, I think it allows for some, like, cool, like, potential for stealth stuff. Like, if they want to lean back into that. If it's meant to be a smaller experience like Mirage is, like, you could create an interesting little sandbox for players to play around with, sort of Dishonored style.
Well, that's the other thing.
Emphasize the stealth a bit.
From this leak was, like, there's a fear mechanic, which was in the Syndicate DLC.
Yeah, so, like, you could, Jack the Ripper DLC.
Yeah, like, creep people out and stuff. And you could, that's a cool idea. Like, being a witchy Batman person in the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, I haven't like really kind of spent any considerable time with an Assassin's Creed game in a fair while, and this is kind of doing enough of enough differently by the sounds of things that I'm going to give it some more time when it eventually comes out in like 3 years or whatever. Alright, well, I do have a rapid fire question for you all. James, these kind of past few weeks I've been on Hollow Knight Silksong watch. Yes or no to each of you, could we see the game at the ID at Xbox Digital Showcase scheduled for next week? It did appear on the Xbox Store recently, which kind of made me think maybe. Shannon, what do you reckon? Yes or no? Could we see it?
I say yes.
Harry?
Yes, but I'm coping.
James?
Yeah. Xbox is really good at promoting these games that do better everywhere else. So, like, I reckon this will definitely come out, like, at their event. First.
Okay, I think this is unanimous then. I think we're all saying yes, it could happen. Keep your eyes peeled.
That means it's not going to happen.
Keep your eyes peeled for that one. We'll obviously have it on the site if you don't catch the showcase. Alright, What the Wiki is the Press Start Podcast's game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestant, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. If you clean sweep it too, you get a bonus third. As last week's winner, Shannon, is in the hosting chair. James, I know this will be interesting to you, because we were kind of curious to see how the scoring might kind of shape up whilst you're awake. Gave people an opportunity to catch up a little bit.
Yeah, I've been listening.
That didn't really happen. We all kind of shared the points, and you stayed comfortably at the top. So you're still clear in first place on 12 points. I did narrow the gap, though, somewhat miraculously. I'm just behind on 10 points. Kieran and Shannon are tied with 9 points, Brody on 8, and Harry, really the biggest mover of them all, he's now got 5 points. So I reckon you were maybe 0 or 1 point when we last had James on the show.
I think
so,
1 or something.
Yeah, you've done well. But Shannon, as last week's winner, you are today's host. Take it away when you're ready.
Let's do this. Always exciting when I'm hosting, I know. The game is a 2012 top-down shooter that was released initially for Windows. It's set in 1989 and revolves primarily around an unnamed silent protagonist receiving coded messages on his answering machine.
Ewan. Is this Hotline Miami?
It is Hotline Miami. Well done, Ewan. Yeah. Hot off
I
the gate.
That was a PC title initially.
Look, I'm just reading off the Wikipedia. Can't confirm or deny.
It probably was.
Okay, let's go here. The game is a 2019 platform game created by the indie developer Justin Stander. It's set in a dystopian metropolis with the neo-noir storyline following Subject Zero, an assassin with amnesia. I think if we're going off name, James technically got his name.
I went,
Is it Katana Zero?
It is Katana Zero.
Yeah, good.
All right. Like, the game is a 3D isometric action-adventure game. The player starts with a sword and a bow and arrow. Sword strikes string together into combos, and ammo for the bow is replenished by using the sword. 4 other weapons and 3 magic projectiles.
Is this Hades?
No. 4 other weapons and 3 magic projectiles become available as the game progresses, but the basic attack mechanics remain. You're back in.
Thank you.
At the start, the player has 4 health points, 6 in the mobile version, with all damage causing 1 to be depleted. Health is recovered by collecting and planting seeds in pots, one of your favourite activities, Ewan, which appear throughout the world. The seeds grow into plants which restore Ewan. Full... Yes, Ewan.
Is this Death's Door?
It is Death's Door.
Wow.
Well
Let's
done.
Let's go!
Ewan. So the theme was Brody's favourite Devolver games. We know he loves his Devolver games. There's plenty to choose from.
There is a lot of good ones. That's such a stitch-up. Like, the week Brody's not on, you've just, like, made the perfect round
well,
for
that,
him.
It would have just been too easy for him otherwise. So. Well done, Ewan. That was a heated... Sorry, Harry, nothing for you in there.
No, it's okay. No, well.
Guy, if I'd been slightly quicker on Katana Zero, I would have got ahead of James that round. That is... Yep.
But you did.
Infuriating. With that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by James. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ewan. You can find me on X at James, ATJMZ.
Doing a marvelous job hosting today, might I say. It was Shannon.
Thank you. I did. That was probably my best so far. I'll take that. Yeah. You can follow me at Shannon Grixty on the socials.
And sharing his Stellar Blade review, it was Harry.
You can follow me at Harry_Kalo, KALO on socials. Go check out my Stellar Blade review.
I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxpro. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.